Let's talk with Catherine Austin Fitz in Tennessee. She's on the phone, ready to go. She publishes the Solari Report. Catherine, can you hear me?
It's great to be here, Max.
Now, Catherine, you actually, if I have been reading your biographical information correctly, you started your career in the devil's lair there at Goldman Sachs.
Yes, that's the case. I was a summer intern at Goldman Sachs in the summer of 1977.
Okay. Now, let's go flash forward to the present. Goldman Sachs will be paying out the biggest bonuses in their 140-year history this year, apparently. Now, how is that possible when the financial system is literally being held together, or so we're told, with scotch tape and paper clips? What's going on here?
Well, remember, Goldman Sachs is primarily an intermediary. And they can make, you know, if they can make more money dumping the economy than they can pumping. So if you time it right, particularly if you have inside information, you can make money as the economy improves and make money as the economy fails. In fact, failure is often more profitable. But we've also seen the interaction between the federal government is such that when Goldman loses money, the government steps in, you know, does a series of things that guarantees them profit, access to capital, and then when Goldman makes money, they don't have to give it to the government. They get to keep it for themselves. So it's kind of lose, you win, win, you win. And, you know, it's the ultimate in welfare economics.
Right.
And so Goldman has just recently paid off the TARP program, gotten out from under, and is now free to pay as much as they want in bonuses. Although I must say, Max, that this is one of the first times I've ever thought this. I took a look at the announcement last week about the expected bonuses at Goldman, and I thought, you know, this has reached the point where these guys need to be worried about the safety of their family. I mean, the arrogance is really dangerous at this point because the mood is shifting very dramatically here in North America.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got mainstream media press. You've got Lawrence Kudlow over there on CNBC. You've got Paul Farrell at MarketWatch, Dow Jones, Wall Street Journal, openly questioning some of these larcenistic tendencies of Goldman, and they are angry. And these guys are acolytes of the kind of the Murdoch Fox News laissez-faire system that we're just supposed to look the other way while this wealth pilfering is going on. But you go ahead.
Well, there's something. I mean, you're describing criminals that are upset because other criminals are better at it and making more money. So, but there's another fact pattern, which is, you've got. I just came back from a meeting in Arizona, and a world of hardworking, responsible, small business people who are having their lending cut off, even though they're perfectly profitable. You know, but the economic warfare is coming down on them hard, and what they're beginning to realize is something that you and I have said for years, that this is really an intentional criminal endeavor, and they've been had.
Yeah.
And when you have people with that, you know, who have that kind of record of responsibility and hard work, and they realize that what is coming at them is criminal,
right?
You know, then they're prepared to take action.
Okay, so what you're describing there is a larceny arbitrage. So the
right.
there is a different classes of larceny. You've got Goldman at the top of the larceny hierarchy, and now you've got guys like, as we mentioned, who are in the middle of the larceny hierarchy, who might be on CNBC or Fox News, who are actually now being victimized, which always happens in a huge pyramid scheme, is that ultimately
right.
Everybody loses at the end of a pyramid scheme. And so now even the people who are mid-level losers in the pyramid scheme. And if I'm not mistaken, just last year, Goldman was targeted and implicated in a scheme where they're actually making huge bets against their own clients.
Right.
Could you go
right.
into that a little bit? It was in the bond market.
Right. When you're making as big bets as they are against, when you're betting that the economy will fail and profiting from its fail, you know, increasingly you're betting against everybody. I would say that Goldman's not at the top of the larceny scale. I'd say they're at the top of the larceny bureaucracy.
Well, they were selling bonds to, on behalf of customers and then selling short those bonds in the market, driving the price lower. So, in fact, they were turning their clients into fodder. And, of course, they hide in the tall weeds of saying we're trying to maintain liquidity, we're trying to maintain price discovery, we're trying to maintain capital ratios. And they use all the jargon that they possibly can. But basically, when you blow away the jargon and you blow away the smoke, it's basically grand theft larceny.
One of the most interesting things you've seen is you now have the sort of the squabbling reaching. I mean, what we've watched is Lehman go down, Bear Stearns go down, AIG go down, and it's kind of a financial cannibalism on Wall Street.
Right. So you've got
so
the bailouts.
Literally, your success depends on being able to take down one of your fellow syndicate members.
Right. Let's remember that the bailouts of AIG ended up as being a pass-through mechanism to just put money in the Goldman pocket, which now it turns out they're just going to put it in their own pockets as far as their bonus schemes.
Correct.
Right. So this is just a pass-through mechanism. So what about this $13.6 trillion so far we've seen in government subsidies, government bailout money? This is also approximately the loss in portfolio value of Americans across the board. So is there a kind of a matchup there?
Right. Well, it's another thing. If you look at the history of the Republic from the Revolutionary War until about a year or two ago, it took us our entire history to accumulate $12 trillion of debt. And now, literally in a year and a half, we've bestowed the equivalent amount of money on the banks. And it's literally like rounding up all the net equity left in the country and just transferring it to a small banking sector. And that's why I call it a financial coup d'etat, because it's that significant and that extreme.
And how come Americans aren't responding?
I disagree that they're not interested. I mean, if you look at the history of the last 20 years, the people who stood up in this kind of process have been killed, assassinated, and it's very, you know, the violence, the covert violence in America is significant, has been significant for a long time. The biggest job industry in America is sort of the latest version of COINTELPRO, which is, you know, surveillance and controlling of America.
Okay, speaking of covert violence, Catherine Austin Fitz.
Uh-huh.
It's front page news that the CIA is now looking to recruit ex-bankers.
I know. And what's amazing is that the article talks about the top pay scale being, you know, the CIA will offer $160,000. And what a come down it is. You know, I have to tell you, here in Hickory Valley, Tennessee, $160,000 a year is is the equivalent of a gazillionaire. So this is not too painful, and it also makes you wonder who they were working for to begin with.
Well, you know, Warren Buffett called these derivatives weapons of mass financial destruction. So the people who know how to build them and to use them to destabilize markets are bankers. Now that they're being laid off because Goldman Sachs is attacking their own brethren, their own fellow bankers, by getting rid of all the competition. So the CIA, I guess, to compete with Goldman, wants to hire some of those ex-bankers so they can go to war with Goldman. So there's a war between CIA and Goldman brewing.
Well, that I don't know about. But there is, you know, since digital technology took over, the closeness of the relationships between Wall Street and the intelligence agencies just get ever closer, and the use of financial fraud as a tool of economic warfare just keeps growing.
Okay, speaking of financial fraud, in China, it appears that all the stimulus money that they are throwing at their economy is going towards speculation.
You know, I don't know, because I think China's going around the world. I mean, they're on a shopping binge. They're taking their dollars and they're buying up strategic resources all over the world.
Well, they're buying up commodities and they're buying up strategic commodities and they're buying up copper. But they're also plowing into the Shanghai Stock Exchange in a way that is really, we're seeing, we can deduce that it's more of a speculative gambling environment than less strategic. Okay, yes, of course they want.
Right, but the Chinese have for 2,000 years been that way. I was in Shanghai the day that Deng died in 1997. And, you know, everywhere you went, everybody was listening to the radio. They weren't listening to news about the death. They were listening to the opening of the Shanghai stock market. So China, you know, prepare for China having speculative bubbles from here to eternity.
Right. As the whole globe goes to zero interest rate policies and they can't raise rates because they've booked them, backed themselves into a corner. The only thing left is speculation. But let's move for a second to another story that was very interesting last week. On the Italian-Swiss border, two Japanese nationals were caught holding $134.5 billion in U.S. Treasury bonds. What is this all about?
Well, it's interesting. There are three theories on this. One is the paper is real. I've written a lot about all the money that disappeared from the federal government over the last 15 years. And you can't have that kind of missing money, Max, without tremendous amount of things like treasury securities issued off balance sheet. So, you know, theoretically, it's possible that they're real. What's interesting is even if they're counterfeit, it's still a deeply disturbing story because you've got an amount of securities that would make them, you know, theoretically the fourth largest creditor of the United States in the world. What does it say about the dollar that counterfeiters would operate with those kinds of denominations in that amount? You know, it's kind of as bad news for the dollar if it's counterfeit as it's real. And finally, you know, another third hypothesis about this is it's kind of a staged hit to create bad news about the dollar, but it says the same thing. You know, it's almost as though it's gotten so big and so weird, whatever the truth is, that it's bad news for the dollar.
Well, if in fact you're going to a zero interest rate policy around the world, and if in fact in the U.S. they're throwing tens of trillions of dollars into this black hole of debt coming from a source that they refuse to have any accountability for, isn't it a fair statement, Catherine Austin Fitz, to say every single bond issued by the U.S. government at this point is counterfeit?
It's economically counterfeit. The question is it legally counterfeit? And that's relevant because if they're not legally counterfeit, if they're legally affirmed, then ultimately creditors, as a matter of state, have the right to demand our water, land, and resources. I often say to people in the United States, you know, you think you own your home, but you may not.
Right. Well, in fact, if they are engaging in what's called naked short selling, these primary government bond dealers, and they're selling treasury bonds that don't actually exist, then that is outright blatant counterfeiting. And we've seen naked short selling in other areas of the market. I think you cover naked short selling to some degree. It's becoming more of an issue. This is just issuing stocks and securities that don't exist. If that's counterfeiting, basically naked short selling is the same as counterfeiting. And why not in the U.S. Treasury bond market? Why not? Nobody's stopping them. There's no regulatory authorities. There's nobody watching the store.
I think the big problem we're looking at, I mean, we're coming into a period, August, September, October, where we have huge deficit financing. The primary dealers have to push out, you know, huge amounts of treasury paper. And I'm not sure that they can keep that up given the probable counterfeit and securities fraud in the treasury market and the collateral fraud in the mortgage market. And that's why I think rumors of bank holidays need to be not completely dismissed, because the danger is you've got a highly centralized system. It's unbelievably fragile, and it's being asked to, you know, to pound out a couple more trillion dollars of paper, and it can't do that, Max, without war. I mean, you've got to hold real guns to serious people's head to get them to buy more at this volume, given the fragility of the system.
Thank you, Catherine Austin Fitz. That's all the time we have for today on The Edge, and thanks again to Stacey Herbert. We'll be back next week with another edition of On the Edge. Until then, bye, y'all.